When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Chuck Wisner has spent 30 years as a trusted advisor, coach, and teacher in communications, human dynamics, and leaderships. He's worked with organizations like Harvard, MIT, and the Fortune 200. His newest book is The Art of Conscious Conversations, Transforming How We Talk, Listen, and Interact. Welcome to the show, Chuck.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal lives, more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Okay. So personal life, I live, as I was telling you, George, I live in a lovely little beach town north of Boston, 30 miles, with my wife. We have two sons who are out in the world doing their things, and both of them just had babies. So we're new grandparents. So, you know, that's really a change for us, a lovely change. Unfortunately, neither son is, and their wives are near us, but we do get to see them. And so we have a lovely property here. We like to garden. I like to play around outside in nature and all that jazz. So that's a snapshot. my work and my book is sort of a punctuation point of the work I've been doing with leaders for the last 25, 30 years. And it came about because in the work I was doing with people around language and conversations and all that jazz, people would often say, I love this work we're doing. I'm learning so much, but A, I don't know how to connect the dots. And isn't there a book I could read? And the truth was that there are a lot of books, but none of them compiled sort of the key elements that I thought would help people understand conversations in a new way. So that was the birth of the book. And that took quite a few years to produce. And here we are. And I enjoyed writing the book. It was a slog for me because I didn't think I was a writer. So I had to bust my own story. And now I'm enjoying writing. I'm writing a bunch of articles. I'm a contributor for Forbes and have articles in Fast Company and things like that. And that's really fun for me. I get to work on my writing craft.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right. So understand conversations in a new way. I can understand why the book would be difficult because that's certainly ambitious.
That's right. So, yeah. So I like to say that we grow up learning conversations through our families and our experience and our cultures. And so we adopt conversational patterns. However, because we sort of unconsciously adopt them, we then are often in conversation without being fully aware of how to navigate, especially when things go a little south. We get, you know, then our emotions kick in and then we freeze or we flight or we fight. A quote I love is, we're like fish in water. We're humans in conversation, but we don't understand the water we're swimming in.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of the book is to try to lay out the DNA of conversations, how they work, different types of conversations. So with new ways of hearing them and understanding them, we can then navigate them in a new way. So that was sort of the premise of giving people new eyes and ears to how they work and then have choices about what they do in their interactions.
It's fascinating. I've got an 8-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 2-year-old. The 2-year-old was not the one we were talking with, but the 8-year-old was curious about why different languages have evolved and why they speak this language there. And so we had a conversation about that. But how we have conversations is in essence very, very similar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there are common threads across languages. Linguistically, there's, I mean, how words get put together into sentences and how we understand and listen. But the fundamentals to understand that there's four different kinds of conversations, and each kind has a different have different things to learn about and teach us and practice. So the book is it, I can say it's not like an easy summer read because it asked a lot of the reader to sort of investigate their own conversational patterns and go, oh, that one's serving me, that one's not serving me, what can I do differently? And so that's what the evolution of the different conversations, how it leads us through tough situations.
And I imagine you've gotten such diverse feedback just because people have all these different communication styles and different experiences. And I also imagine that maybe, or perhaps not, it's I'm coming into the book or coming into every new conversation with my available vocabulary, with my intellect, with my different experiences. And so some of this stuff may be natural to me. I just haven't had the words for it. And some of it may be, oh, I've never even considered that.
Yeah, and on top of everything you said is always operating in the background are our emotions. So in every conversation, there are issues around power. There are issues around, who we're actually interacting with, and our emotions get triggered. But the interesting thing about emotions is that emotions are actually there, and I'm not, emotions are emotions. They're real. We all have them. What we have to do is understand that emotions are a physical manifestation of our thinking. So when something happens, we might have an internal dialogue that says, oh shit, I'm in trouble. I'm never going to make my deadline, or oh crap, I shouldn't have said that. Our thinking actually inside that we're our brain is generating actually fires off neurons, then that is what triggers our emotions, because we have these chemical responses to, oh my gosh, I'm really in trouble. And so one new way to think about emotions is, what's the story under the emotion? And if we look at the story under the emotion, there's always issues of power. We have concerns about the future. We have standards that we live by that we pretty much unconsciously adopted. And we have desires. And those things are always at play driving our emotions. But if we take a look at them, it gives us an insight into ourselves that otherwise we might not have.
And so, as I become aware that I go through this sort of, I go through all these different feelings and they are coming up because of my past experiences, I become aware of them. So, afterwards, if the conversation didn't go quite as well as I thought or wanted, I can explore or wonder why I had those responses. And then, as I do that, hopefully, I'm able to actually self-regulate during the actual conversation and not after, just because I'm getting better.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So, yes, it's true, and there's no magic switch where you go, oh, I'm going to investigate my story, so tomorrow I won't do that again.
Right.
It's like I think of a pendulum. It's like something happens, and then 2 hours later, I go, oh crap, I shouldn't have said that. Right? So we investigate that feeling and we learn from it. And then the next time it happens, maybe it's 2 minutes, not 2 hours. But the more we do that practice, the more we pull it into real time where we can go, oh, you know what? I really have a concern about that. Can we talk about that? And can I tell you how I feel? So it's a practice to sort of like undo our patterns, because we have conversational patterns that might be 20, 30, 40, 50 years old, right? And so when we're looking at them, investigating them, we're actually screwing around with neurons in our brain. So it takes a little time to make new It's like rain dropping on a windshield. It'll always take the path of easy, the path of the easiest path, right? Of least resistance. But, and that's what we do in conversations. We do what we know how to do because it's effortless. But when we change, it takes effort and practice.
Practice of undoing our conversational patterns. It's like a muscle memory. I swing a golf club. I've
It's
been swinging a golf club for 30 years. It's hard to swing it differently.
yes, exactly. And that too takes practice, and attention and awareness. So for me, for a lot of people that I work with, them just beginning to pay attention to conversations that don't feel right for them in a new way, like pay attention, you increase your awareness, and then you say, oh, I have other options that I can move, that I can make a change here. So that first step is just recognizing that we have patterns that don't serve us, and are we willing to pay attention? Are we willing to be aware and then investigate? I grew up with a story from my grandfather, my step grandfather, who was a real redneck down in Pennsylvania. And every time I had three sisters, but if I cried, I was told I was being a sissy and not a big enough man. If I didn't want to skin the deer in the basement of the cellar or the cellar basement, down in the basement, I was told I'm not a big enough man. So here I am, six, seven, eight. He's an older man. I gave his voice a lot of power. I adopt that story. I grew up with that story, even though there's another story that countered that, which from my grandmother, which was like from the other side, my mother's side, which was like I could basically walk on water. So it's amazing I'm not schizophrenic. But I lived with that story until I was able to bust it and go, wait a minute, that was his idea what a man is. I can have a different standard about what a man is. And that was really life-changing for me. So anytime we can bust a story that's not serving us, it'll change your life.
Totally agree. Totally agree. I don't know that I want to go down to the basement and skin that deer either, Chuck. So I can tell you're.
It wasn't pretty.
No, that sounds really terrible. Doesn't make me a sissy, sir.
Sir, yes. And then the belt might come out,
Right. Yeah. Thanks. Okay. I guess I'll go down to the basement. Jeez. It strikes me that this work, your book, has never been more important as we are walking around on eggshells with our words, and words have seemingly become violence. And when I was a kid, it was sticks and stones can hurt my bones, but words or whatever can't hurt. But words, I think
Never,
you get the idea, right?
never
So
hurt me, yeah.
is this a new phenomenon that I'm just paying attention to, and it's the same old phenomenon, or are things shifting?
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Currently, I think we're just we're our unsettledness, let's say, is because there is a big shift going on. And so I take a meta sort of perspective. I sort of step outside and try to have a bigger perspective historically and just from being at 10,000 feet up instead of being in the weeds. And I think if you read I don't know if you know the author Yuval Harari. It's a great, he wrote Sapiens. If you look historically, we've made incredible sort of progress. And even spiritual teachers like Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, we've made incredible progress around human consciousness and tolerance and, accepting differences and things like that. So as we evolve as human beings and our consciousness grows, there's a lot of implications there that scare the bejesus out of other people. I mean, it's like, oh no, because there's people that live in the world like, this is right and wrong. This is what marriage is. This is what how life should be. And so I think we're living in a time right now when the progress we've made in the last 50 years, there's been a lot around race issues and voting rights and women and gender and all that kind of stuff. We have a huge backlash now against that. And that backlash is the fear. And so I think in the end, our evolution of consciousness will win, but we have to be super alert. And it doesn't mean we accept that there's a backlash, but it doesn't mean we roll over. We have to really fight back as best we can. And I just wrote an article yesterday about the danger of not accepting factual information, the danger of not trusting experts, the danger of not believing in science. Society and culture thrives and is only possible because of things we agree on, facts, what money is, what law is, what is it to break a law. And as soon as we start eliminating that sort of fundamental issue around facts, we're on very slippery, slippery territory. I don't know if that answered your question.
Well, it certainly is the truth. And like any big problem, it strikes me that me sitting here in Arizona, I can't solve all the world's issues, but I can identify things that I can perceive to be problems and tackle it in my own life. And I think that the four questions
Right.
that you're presenting, if I map those onto my life and every conversation that I had, what are my desires? What are my concerns? What power issues are at play? And what rules and codes are sort of shaping my decisions and my judgments? If I did that, then I'd be better and I'd be influencing the world, and then the world be a better place. And that's always what I sort of fall back on.
And those four questions are really a fun, it's just sort of a recipe that I designed to help people quickly go, okay, why am I upset? Why am I angry? Why am I sad? Why am I happy? I mean, what's going on? That helps us understand our thinking and go a little deeper. But it's also wonderful in conversations because if everyone comes to a conversation with their fists, like, no, it has to be this way. No, it has to be this way. We're just constantly in a battle. As soon as one person opens their hand and goes, let me re so we have a position, but then there's thinking under our position, like there's thinking under our emotion. If we can open our hand using those four questions, well, let me tell you, George, I have a concern, and let me explain to you what my concern is. Or I have a standard that I think this is what good would look like, or this is what success would look like, or this is how a father should behave. I have those standards. If I start sharing that and I'm opening my hand, I'm actually takes courage. I have to be humble because I have a position, but it's not the truth. It's just an opinion, right? Then when I open my hand, I'm a little vulnerable, I'm humble, I'm courageous. And sometimes other people sense that and they'll match you. They'll meet you. Other people won't. That's okay. We can still do our part to try to open the conversation. And the third thing about the questions that you mentioned is they make good questions to ask other people in a conversation. Like if we were really like this, I could just stop saying, let me stop fighting it. Let me just ask George. George, what is your fundamental concern? What do you want to have happen? Which is sort of a question around desires. That can change any conversation if we take the time to just relax and ask some questions instead of battling out to win our position.
No doubt. I like the idea of coming to a conversation with an open hand. And certainly everything that I do when I'm vulnerable about things, that really helps a lot.
Yes.
And going first and letting people know, hey, I'm far from perfect, and I know that I don't have all the answers here. I'm wanting to engage in a very genuine conversation. The thing that pisses me off and turns me off more than anything, maybe in the whole world, because I do love conversation so much, is when people are disingenuous, and I can
Yes.
clearly tell that they're trying to manipulate me by using great questions, but I see it's BS because they're not really interested in having a conversation with me. They're interested in just getting whatever they want.
And usually those folks are asking questions to prove you wrong. They're not asking questions, excuse me. They're not asking questions to really understand your deeper thoughts. Right? And when we meet people like that, I'm often told, well, what do we do? Because we're supposed to have a good conversation. Well, a good conversation isn't always possible. If someone's manipulating you, or someone's doing a power trip on you, or someone's not opening their hand and they're just ramming their thinking into, it has to be this way, and they're doing that, leave. Take a breath and walk away. Say, I love you, but this isn't a conversation we can have. And remove yourself. That is perfectly acceptable option to for an action to take.
What a powerful thing that is. This does not feel good to me at all. I've been here before and I'm not interested in being here anymore. And why dig my heels in? Why try to match that? Or why try to turn it around if it's clear it's not going to happen? I'll just maybe fight another day.
And I don't have a responsibility to change that person's mind. And if they're not willing to have an open conversation with open hand, open heart, that's their problem, not mine. As Mel Robbins would say, let them let them be jerks, let them behave that way, and but don't give them your energy. 'Cause that's when we give our power away.
It's so well said, and to have this framework is really helpful because, I mean, I learned about sociology my freshman year of college, and it was that learning about the interactionist approach is that our lives are the sums of the interactions we have with other people. And so if there's a way for me to increase my ability to have constructive, positive conversations, then why wouldn't I want to do that? And it strikes me that that's what you've done. So great job, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a process. I'm actually doing these podcasts just to get more people to pay attention to the book and to really just not everybody's going to want to do the work. It's like I said, it's not a summer read. It's enlightening, but it takes a little bit of effort.
Yeah, not everybody's going to want to do the work. It's funny, I see parallels with really everything. It's like I think we all intellectually know that I should have a better diet, I should have a better exercise program, but I think things are going along just fine, so
I with my clients, they all say, well, what I just I don't I never want to do this again. I want to lose the weight, or I want to do this, and they're asking me for advice, and I'm happy to give them advice, but I said, but you know what? There's a trick here. There's no magic pill. There's no magic switch. If you told me you never want to behave that way again, or you don't want to be that kind of dad, you want to be this kind of dad, you don't want to be that kind of leader, you want to be this kind of leader, and I had a switch, say, okay, pay me $10,000 and I'll pull the switch, I'd be a very rich man, but there's no damn switch.
Darn it.
It takes effort, it takes practice, it takes time. Sometimes these changes happen, like you might go, I never want to do that. You get a new awareness about what your pattern is, and you go, I can shed that. I can like let that go. When I investigated my own story about not a big enough man, when I really spent a couple of weeks investigating that, it just fell off. It just moves away, right? So sometimes it can happen, and sometimes it just takes more time.
Yeah. But like anything else, Chuck, anytime that we try to get better at something, we oftentimes do. So, So
Yes, right.
I'm certainly grateful for the work. Thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage? And where can they get their copy of The Art of Conscious Conversations?
So it's on Amazon. If they do read it and they like it, it's really helpful for me if people do a review. Or ask your local bookstore to order it. My publisher is Barrett Kohler. It's easily available. My website is chuckwisner.com, chuckwisner.com. And if you just scroll down a little bit, there's a place where you can get a free PDF of the introduction. You just put your email in and then it gets sent to you. And I don't blast people with, if they get, you giving me your email doesn't mean I'm going to blast you with the newsletter every other day. I just don't do that. And then I'm on social media. I'm on Instagram lightly, Chuck_Wisner, and LinkedIn, Chuck_Wisner.
Excellent.
And so people read, feel free to reach out, write me an email, write me a note. I take on individual clients, but that's when there's time available.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this much as I did, show Chuck your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to chuckwisner.com, Chuckwisner, and scroll down a little bit, and get a copy of the introduction, and then go to Amazon and get your copy of The Art of Conscious Conversations. Find them on social media. I'll link all those in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Chuck.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.